Merrill, Chair Taylor. First matter we'll take up today is Senate Bill 305, the implementation of a workers' comp addition. Give us your full name and go right ahead. Doing fine.
When an injured worker suffers diminished physical capacity, vocational rehabilitation services step in, and they identify the application and retrain the worker for the job. They got a letter, which I think you have in your packet, telling them that they could not use the 1993 edition because it had not been properly adopted. And this bill is a method for them to update the selected characteristics of occupations defined in the Dictionary of Occupational Titles. They shorten it to SCODOC. It will allow Workers' Compensation Board with public notice to adopt the new version of SCODOC.
And it also provides a cleanup language so that in the future, should this occur, they would also be authorized to do so.
They can immediately adopt the 93 version and they have a process.
Any questions? Yes, Senator Parnell?
Is there anybody else? Protesting?
Yeah, there is.
Okay.
Paul Grassi is also present.
Can I move it?
Yeah. By the way, Paul, do you like it?
Yes.
Chair to entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would move SB 305 from committee with individual recommendation.
Is there any objection? There being no objection, the bill moves from committee with individual recommendations. Next item we'll take up is Senate Bill 331. By the way, thank you for your input, Paul.
Thank you.
I got a few questions.
Good afternoon, Senator Taylor, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. My name is Beth Hagevig, and I'm a staff person for Senator Jerry Wilson, who was going to be here today, but got held up in a subcommittee closeout. So he's upstairs and is trying to come on now. But in his absence, I'd like to give a very short presentation on Senate Bill 331.
Right ahead.
Senate Bill 331 establishes a board to license and regulate experienced master's and doctorate level professional counselors whose education and experience do not fall within the existing behavioral health specializations of licensed clinical social worker, licensed marriage and family therapist, psychologist, or psychological associate. This bill is good for counselors because it opens doors to employee assistance programs that currently require that service providers have a license to qualify for the program. It broadens career opportunities for counselors who wish to work for entities that require licensure. It provides incentives for master's level behavioral health graduates of Alaska's university system to stay in state and take advantage of licensing opportunities that already exist in state or other states. It includes licensed professional counselors under Rule 504, protecting them from contempt of court in cases where client confidentiality must be protected. This bill is good for Alaska consumers because it establishes a minimum standard of education and experience that clients can trust, partially eliminating the buyer beware situation that currently exists. It institutes grievance procedures and gives legal recourse for clients of licensed professional counselors who feel they have been victims of fraudulent, unethical, or negligent practices. It gives clients who require mental health services greater choice and comfort in choosing the provider that best suits their needs, both emotionally and financially. And it increases the availability of licensed mental health providers who practice statewide, giving better access to mental health care to Alaska's rural residents. This bill has the support of the American Counseling Association and the ACA of Alaska, the Alaska School Counselor Association, and numerous professional counselors and clients. And I'm available for questions if you have any.
Thank you. Do you have any questions, Senator Parnell?
Right now.
No.
Thank you very much. You can just stand by.
Great.
Okay. On the list, they had Ann Henry, and you're up next, Ann.
Okay. morning. My name is Ann Henry, and I'm a not a licensed professional counselor. I'm just a professional counselor. I wanted to start this morning by saying first that Beth has really presented a lot of the reasons that we are encouraging this bill. But also, I wanted to bring this in. This is the publication for the American Council Association. And the top headline here, Senate bill makes counselors full partners in the federal health professional training program. This is a bill that's before the U.S. Senate right now that is recognizing the work of professional counselors in the country. Right now, 44 other states already license or certify professional counselors, and Pennsylvania is expected to pass legislation this year, so that would make Alaska one of five states that doesn't currently recognize the license for professional counselors. We have some 600 people that are already practicing in agencies, individually, and all over the state in the bush and in the cities. So we're already doing this, and the bill itself is not a title, or it is a title restriction, not practice restriction bill. So people that don't want to go through the process of getting a license will not be restricted. So again, people in the rural areas can continue to do their work without having to go through these procedures. This bill requires that Alaska's licensed professional counselors would have education and experience equivalent to that required of those professions currently licensed, the licensed clinical social workers, marital and family therapists, and licensed psychological associates. Again, in this paper, it announces that April is Counseling Awareness Month, and I'd like to just read this first paragraph here. Every day, more than 50,000 professional counselors are busy making a difference in communities throughout the world. These highly trained professionals use their counseling skills to reach out to our diverse population. In addition to being available and helpful to others in intense times of illness and crisis, they also empower people to reach their fullest potentials in all parts of their lives. So, just to end with that, I believe that we are currently a very integral part of the mental health care system in Alaska, and this bill is good for Alaskan consumers and counselors. So I urge your support, and I'm also available for questions.
I noted Senator Wilkin had some correspondence going back and forth between himself, Pamela Watts, and a Robert Lane, Ph.D. The concerns expressed by Dr. Lane appear to be that there is no clinical coursework involved in the that would prepare them for treating serious mental disorders, and that there is nothing that would prepare them for sophisticated psychological testing in the, the curriculum.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps this would be an appropriate time for Mr. Gary Clements to come up. He does work in town here in terms of clinical therapeutic work with folks who are mentally ill, and he could maybe speak to those concerns. Dan. I'm going to let the technical experts here handle that.
Yeah, I'm Gary Clements, and I'm a mental health clinician at the Juneau Mental Health Clinic. I bill every day for psychotherapy. I do psychotherapy every day. I work with chronically mentally ill people every day. I do diagnosis of those people. I do treatment of those people, which is psychotherapy. I work in the emergency room, giving consultation to medical doctors as to whether or not to terminate the civil rights of individuals in order to have them committed under mental health law. I do it all. I don't do testing. I do some testing that I'm trained for in other fields like chemical dependency. I don't think that testing is the issue here, but that we do in our training to do clinical work with people who are chronically mentally ill is the case. I have training in abnormal psychology. I have experience in it. I don't see that there's anyone who's trained as a counselor that wouldn't have training working with people who are chronically mentally ill. That's what we do.
Go ahead, sure.
I wanted to bring this. This is a copy of the DSM-IV. This is the diagnostic and statistical manual that is used by everyone virtually that does any kind of clinical work in the country. It sets the standards, the criteria for any kind of mental health disorder. We are all required to take training in this, and it is put together by psychiatrists, MDs, so that it standardizes the kind of terminology, the kinds of, again, the criteria that is used to determine someone's diagnosis. Additionally, we are, in our bill, we require that people be graduated as master's or PhD level from accredited programs. And the same programs that accredit counseling professionals also are the programs that accredit the psychology programs. We are required to meet certain standards in order to, to graduate. So part of that is also doing an internship of different numbers of hours per, depending on the program that you're in. And then our bill also requires that we take what is the equivalent of usually about 2 years to do 2,000 hours of supervised work. So we do get clinical supervision. We do have that kind of expertise by the time we are able to apply for these licenses.
And if I could bring up one other thing, Mr. Chairman. There, in the bill, we have a limitation of practice. It's section 08-29-230, and that reads, notwithstanding that a specific act is within the definition of the practice of professional counseling, a person's license under this chapter may not perform the act if the person lacks appropriate education or training related to the act. So that's kind of our fallback.
I'm referring in those concerns also to the Alaska Psychological Association. And this was a letter from, again, Dr. Lane. But he was referring to the most recent draft he'd seen, and that was March 20th. There are two areas of concern. The first is a section 08-29-230. While this section does not require appropriate education and trainings to perform the act, nowhere in the bill is there reference to what specifically the education would consist of. Beyond the number of hours completed and how the course of study would relate to limitations in services provided to consumers. Can you respond to that?
Well, if I might, Mr. Chairman, it's actually not, it's fairly consistent with other statutes that are already in place for social workers, licensed professional or licensed social workers, and even associate psychologists. Social workers, if you go through the statute and you look for the requirements for licensure, it says that you have to have the degree in social work and that the supervisory hours of training, but it doesn't say what coursework specifically is under that degree. The same goes for associate psychologists. You have to have a degree in A or B, but it doesn't necessarily specify the coursework, as I read the statute. So the only statute that I can think of that really goes in depth, besides for psychologists, clinical psychologists, are the marriage and family therapists, who really handle a very specialized portion of the population and very specific issues that come up in their therapy relating specifically to marriage and family. And if you look through a lot of the, and maybe Anne can speak to this too, but a lot of the coursework, with the exception of the coursework related to marriage and family therapy, a lot of the coursework is very similar to what the counselors also go through, ethics and that kind of thing. So.
And again, if I can speak, again, the accrediting organizations are very specific about the programs that they are willing to accredit, and they're nationally recognized or regionally recognized. And again, those same accrediting organizations also oversee the programs of psychology and social work and things like that.
Senator
Pornell,
do you have a question?
Go ahead. On another topic, then.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to just explore the confidentiality provisions, the privilege, page 4 and 5, the bottom of page 4. Could you just describe for us what's happening in this section with respect to this, in general terms, what does the privilege protect here?
Oh, actually, privilege is, for Rule 504, is on page 8, I believe. Line 29.
But yeah.
You want to do the other first?
Yeah, if you could do the, you could do confidentiality communications first and then tie that together with the privilege.
Okay.
And both go to that. On the confidentiality communications, I'm just not sure. Tell me how this works with, like, with number 1, page 4, lines 30 and 31, because there are some exclusions there.
Okay. These are fairly standard. The communication to a potential victim of your client. So is that what you are asking about?
It looks to me like they can come to the counselor, reveal something about a potential victim, and then they're not required to hold that confidentially. They can go tell the victim. They can report it to law enforcement.
Yes, if there's a danger to someone else, it's similar to the law that if you, as a counselor, find out that a child is being physically or sexually abused, you're required by law to report that. This is not requiring the person to do that, but it does allow for that. If in your judgment you believe that someone else is at risk, it allows you to take steps to.
Are these different in any way from what other similar provisions are there for other licensed professionals? Where did this come from?
If I can answer that through the chair, Senator Parnell, we took that language, quite a bit of it actually, from Section 0863-200 from the Marriage and Family Therapists, and it's confidentiality of communications. And if you like, I can read it. If you want to match it up, or
as long as they've got the reference.
Okay, yeah. So that was part of when we were taking the language for this bill, we borrowed quite a bit from that statute, and it may not be verbatim, but it's very close. So.
If we can go to the privilege that you mentioned at page 8.
Page 8, line 29, is where amending the Alaska Rules of Evidence to include licensed professional counselors as along with the other practitioners who currently have the privilege. This is something that I believe both counselors and consumer clients believe is already in place. It's the safety from having to have that information divulged if the client is not willing in a court situation.
So if you go see a counselor who's not licensed under this provision, you don't get the privilege.
Right. You can be subpoenaed, and you are the situation is that you either break your code of ethics and tell all, or you can be held in contempt of court.
And the privilege belongs to the client.
It protects
correct.
The client.
Okay. And so the client can waive this.
Right.
Of course. Okay. Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
Go back to what I was first talking about. The Alaska Psychological Association, again, indicated in a letter April 17 that they were concerned about the types of assessment techniques that would be used. And it says, wording that limits the use of assessment techniques to those typically included in counselor training would be supported by AKPA. And the quote that they have, which I'm assuming they would suggest as an amendment, is, consistent with each counselor's formal education and training, licensed professional counselors may administer and utilize appropriate assessment instruments which measure and or diagnose problems and or dysfunctions within the course of human growth and development as part of the counseling process or in the development of a treatment plan. It then goes on to say, appraisal activities shall not include the use of projective techniques in the assessment of personality, nor the use of psychological or clinical tests designed to identify or classify abnormal or pathological human behavior, nor the use of individually administered intelligence tests. Sounds to me like some kind of IQ test, but would you respond to that, please?
Before?
Yeah.
And could you also just work to put that in layperson terminology for us? What's the request being made?
What psychologists traditionally do a lot of testing, and I believe that the testing that they do is they're trained for, and they're trained to interpret those tests. We don't do that kind of testing. They're trying to specifically state in the language of that letter. I do testing that I'm trained for drug and alcohol use or abuse. There, if we're trained for it, the letter is basically saying we can do that, so we should be able to do that. If we're not trained for it, again, it's in our bill that we can't do what we're not trained for. So they're asking us to be really specific and say that these are the things that we will not do. And I actually was just looking in here. There's also, I thought we had an amendment in here to that already covered projective testing, and I'm not seeing it in here. But
we do, actually. It's page 7, line 24. And I'll just start. The practice of professional counseling means the diagnosis and treatment other than through the use of projective techniques of mental and emotional disorders. So,
and again, there's that limitation of practice that says you can't do what you're not trained to do.
One of the major issues I think that's going on here is what traditionally psychologists have been trained to do, hand scoring of these testings like the MMPI and the MCMI, that's not done anymore. It's computer generated, it's computer scored. I can sit a client down with a MCI or MMPI form and they'll fill it out, never having talked to anyone. Instructions are very explicit about what they do. It's very simple. They answer a few hundred questions. I plug the scores through my secretary into the computer. It prints me out a diagnosis and an interpretation, which is what the psychologist used to do. Now, these are artistic kinds of things. The same thing is capable of being done with the Rorschach, and I'm sure people have heard of the mysteries of the Rorschach. But it requires somebody with a great deal of experience to get the subtleties. It's an art, not, you know, a specific science. The specific science is in the computer. I can pick that up and read it and do it. If I want to use that as an official document rather than for my own information, I have my psychologist at the clinic I work in sign off on it.
I assume there's some level of turf protection involved. I'm happy to participate, I guess, in that battle also, but as Senator Parnell indicated, I think we're all somewhat naive to these terms and what the ramifications or either intended or unintended consequences of some of these things may be. But I appreciate that. Is the MMPI, is that the Minnesota Multiphasic?
It's the most commonly used one for personality inventory. The MCMI is generally used to give specific access to or personality disorder diagnosis.
So is that considered a projective technique?
Yes, it would be. And consequently, I am not supposed to use, not supposed to even see those, I've been told by some psychologists, although I've been utilizing them for 20 years. And feel I have some, if you will, artistic ability to make interpretations from those. But I can't officially do it.
Yeah, okay.
I think I just would like to say again that when we put the practice limitation section into this bill, it was with the intention of meeting what we assumed would be the psychologist's request that we limit what we do to what we are trained to do. And so that it was, it really allows people to say, okay, somebody's doing something they shouldn't be doing, and we'd like Catherine Reardon to go in and cause them to cease and desist. And that's what that's for.
It appears as though on page 3, beginning with paragraph 4 on line 4, none of the existing folk would have to comply with that portion.
Have to be written down.
Would have to obtain those degrees or meet those hours. Or am I misreading that?
About, you mean about the folks who are currently practicing counseling who've been, say, practicing for several years and whatnot. We do have a grandfathering provision in the bill. Maybe, Gary, you were telling me earlier today that the scope of education has changed for so many people, for so many fields over the last, say, 20 years, that some of the folks who were being educated 20 years ago to do this kind of work, technically, under the current requirements, would no longer be eligible, but they've been practicing counseling for 20 years.
I think that grandfathering is found on page 9 at line 19.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going from. It says, meet the requirements of Alaska Statute 829-1A1-3. Enacted by Section 1 of this Act and is not subject to trial or license, which means they would not be required to have passed a written exam from a nationally noted group, successfully completed either a doctoral or a master's degree in counseling. They would not be required to have at least 3,000 hours of supervised experience over a period of the last 2 years, etc.
They do have to have a master's or doctoral degree. Am I reading something wrong here?
No, I think
it's
1 through 3.
They don't have to do the testing, but I believe that that's fairly standard with grandparenting, that
yeah,
some things aren't required.
They have to have a master's or doctoral degree, but does that have to be in counseling?
Or a related field.
But anybody coming on later would have to have it in that specific field.
No, it's still in a related field. For instance,
I see, or a related professional field.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But we do require things that, we took sort of language from the marital and family therapist bill, and also increased some of those requirements. There's a requirement for letters from reference letters that the marital and family therapist, I don't think, had to have. And, so we've kind of tried to beef it up a little bit so that, for instance, if you're working somewhere and you're trying to get this provisional license, that you, if there's someone that doesn't think you're an appropriate person, they would be able to write to the board and make a statement. But you still have to have some people that will give you references.
The doctor call in, by the way?
She has.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't we take a brief break from this bill, and I'd like to take up the hearing on confirmation for the Violent Crimes Board, and I believe that's Dr. Alley, Carol Alley in Ketchikan. Are you on the line, doctor?
I'm on the line.
Doctor, do you have any statements you'd like to make?
Well, I've been on the board for several years now, and it's been a very busy board. I think it's a board that does some very important work for the state, and I'm happy to continue on if the state will have me.
Do you have any advice or comments that we need to hear about the Violent Crimes Compensation Board?
Well, I think that the board has gone through a lot of change in the last year. We now have a new administrator, Susan Brown, who I think is the job. I don't know where we stand right now as far as having the attorney on the board. It's been difficult over the last several meetings because we haven't had an attorney on the board. And our claims, we're continuing to get more and more claims in. Which is sort of a sad comment, I think, on what's going on in the state. But I think we've done a good job at being able to compensate the victims of the violent crimes who needed compensation.
Do any members of the committee have questions for Dr. Carol Ali, who is... been serving for some time on our Violent Crimes Compensation Commission. Senator Parnell.
Thank you. I just wanted to, I know you've been there a while, and we appreciate your service, Carol. I just wanted to make sure that, just for the record, we kind of get on the same wavelength, because I want to make sure I understand again what the purpose of the Violent Crimes Compensation Board is, and maybe you could just state that as you understand it.
The purpose of the Violent Crime Compensation Board is to help compensate victims who have been injured as a result of a violent crime. That can sometimes be like a drunk driver who's injured innocent people. It can be the shootings or rape or sexual abuse of children. We cover anything from medical expenses, counseling expenses, funeral expenses, relocation costs if it's like a spouse who's been involved in domestic violence and needs to relocate, things like that. Typically, we'll cover up to $25,000 for an individual, and then in cases where several family members have been involved, such as a drunk driving case where several people, or maybe parents, have been injured or killed, it'll cover up to $40,000 for the family to help care for the children. So it covers a lot of different things for folks.
When I understand the board is funded, if not all, at least in significant part, through felons, PFDs, and I was just curious, with a limited pool of money and perhaps more victims than, and more damage than money to go around, what criteria do you use as your standard for apportioning?
Yeah, you know, I think what we're looking at is this person truly an innocent victim? And a lot of times that's very, very difficult to tell. So we try and first determine, is this person truly an innocent victim of a violent crime? And it is difficult to tell. You know, sometimes you read through and people have been involved in drug or alcohol things when this crime occurred and they were injured. And it can be a very fine line to determine if this person is truly innocent and therefore, someone we can compensate for their loss. And basically, we go on a case-by-case basis. I don't think there's anything in writing that says, if somebody is, I know there isn't, there's nothing in writing that says, if somebody is drunk during the time that they're injured, you can't compensate them. But certainly, it can be a very difficult judgment to make. And that's part of our concern is, certainly the claims are going up, and our concern is, will we have the funds available to compensate the people in need? So, I don't know if I've answered your question. It's a difficult one.
No, you have, and you've made it clear that you understand the board's responsibilities under state law. So I appreciate that. I appreciate the time you give to it. Thank you.
Any further questions? Doctor, thank you very much, and on behalf of the committee and the Senate, I'd like to thank you again for your great service. We know that takes valuable time from your life and your practice, and we just want you to know on behalf of all of us, we really appreciate the fact that you've stepped forward to do this and that you're willing to continue to do so. So thank you again. Mary Matthews, are you online?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. You're
okay.
Coming in loud and clear.
Good, great.
We're moving both. If you'd like, you might go right ahead and make a statement to the committee.
Sure, I'd be glad to do that. I'm Mary Matthews, and I'm a recent recommendation to the Alaska Judicial Council. As of last June, I believe, at least I went to my first meeting last June, and have gone to about three or four meetings since then. I'm one of three public members that gets recommended for confirmation by the governor, and I'm real pleased to be considered for this position. I think it's a real important council. I'm sure you're aware of what most of their duties are, primarily centered around recommending judge appointments to the governor, and I guess I'm just interested in what questions you might have.
Any questions? Yes, Senator Parnell, go right ahead.
Mary, just like the last individual, maybe could you describe over in the last year of your involvement what some of the types of work you've been involved in as it relates to that public position?
Yeah, sure. We primarily we have done interviews to say that for every judge position that comes up, there's an application process that the staff at the Judicial Council does most of the background work on, and then the Judicial Council receives pretty fat booklet of the applications, the barcodes, the background information, letters of reference, things like that. And then we schedule interviews with anyone who has applied for those positions. So probably we've, in the last year, interviewed, I don't know, I would guess somewhere around 30 different people for three or four different positions, one position on the appellate court, a position in Wasilla, one in Valdez, and a couple in Fairbanks. Then at the end of the interviewing process, then what we do is recommend the most qualified applicants to go to the governor's office We do spend a little bit of time looking at some of the other work that the Judicial Council is involved in terms of issues around improving the court system and the judiciary system for the state of Alaska, but that's fairly minor, actually, compared to the interviewing process.
Mary, what criteria do you use as a public member when recommending people for judgeships? Winnowing that process down.
Right. Well, I don't have the law background that some of the other people do, but I have a lot of general background. I come out of a background in education and library science and community psychology. I've worked for nonprofits in Fairbanks. I've worked for the university library system. Right now I'm working in adult literacy and adult education. And I've done a lot of recruiting and interviewing myself. I've been in several different management positions. So I feel like I have a fairly good respect for the whole selection process and a feel for how that works. For myself, I think there's, you know, the process that's laid out by the Judicial Council itself is a fairly complete one and a fairly professional one. There's the application itself. There's a writing sample that applicants submit that's reviewed for its adequateness as a writing tool. There are letters of reference that come with it, including letters from sitting judges. There's a bar poll, which is a very extensive poll that's conducted among the professional legal field as well as court employees and people like that. There's the interview itself in which many questions are asked and I think things like temperament, fairness, being willing to apply the law in a fair and respectful way. Those are issues we try to get at in an interview process. And I usually, you know, feel the role a little bit of, what would the public think? And I usually do ask people I know in the community, do you know anything about this person? What kind of judge do you think, or do you have any recommendations? I try to get a little background like that. But, of course, most people, unless you have someone that's actually applying who's been a judge, it's a little bit of speculation, I guess, in terms of what someone would be like as a judge. So it's an interesting process, and I've come to believe that it's a pretty good process. I have a lot of confidence in the process in producing really good recommendations for the governor.
Thank you.
Can you tell me, this Chairman Taylor, has the bar poll been peer reviewed to any extent, or have you people amended it or changed it in any way in the last several years?
I have to guess go back to the. It hasn't been amended in the last year when I've been on it, and I have to go back and check with Bill Cotton to see about what revisions have been made. I know that every time the Judicial Council meets, we talk about the process of selection and how we can make it better, how we can respond to some of the concerns there are around the process. There's been a lot of discussion about the bar poll. Some people feel that there's block voting or that it's kind of a biased poll, and there have been efforts made to survey the legal profession and see how it can be made better. I think there's quite a bit of effort to be on a continuous evaluation and revision of the process. And the council, at least from my point of view, the council is quite open to any input. Anytime someone says to me, well, I don't like the bar poll, then I say, well, and people in Fairbanks have said this to me, attorneys have said this, and I say, well, what would you do to change it? And then there really isn't any specific information that comes out of the next step. So I think for right now it's really the best we have, and And I think we're open to looking at changes that would make it better.
I'm probably the only member of the legislature that's been through that process, and I think I've been through it four different times, and each time I was blessed in that the council forwarded my name on to the governor at the time. But I can honestly tell you that I seldom fill them out anymore because I'm so disappointed in the fact that they're still allowed to be totally anonymous. Comments are allowed to be made in those polls that can be very damaging to candidates, and yet you have no idea where that comment came from. It's like letting some little kid in a playground throw a ball of mud at you as you walk by, and it lacks professionalism to the extent that block voting has always been a problem and will always be a problem as long as we have large block voting agencies like the Public Defender Agency, the Alaska Attorneys General and all of their pals, and then you watch two or three large firms come in, and they will block vote through every single member they have. And I can honestly tell you that each time I ran, the very first time I ran, there were two attorneys that actually worked in the 4th Judicial District in Nome, and that was Neil Connelly. And Garrison, who was the district attorney out there. I knew both of them and got good rating from both of them. 3 years later, I went to run, and there were 9 public defenders and Vista volunteers out there, and all 9 of them, none of whom had ever met me or practiced with me in any way, wouldn't have known me from a cord of wood if I walked through the door, all 9 of them rated me as absolutely terrible, atrocious, awful, the lowest rating you could get. And it was unanimous on every single one of them. Just so happened that a whole bunch of their buddies in several other areas of the state attempted to do the same thing. And so continuing to use that bar poll will result in, I think, very poor recommendations. Personally, I'd throw the whole thing out and ask people to send in a written response to your poll as to whether or not they like the person or not and sign their name. At the end of which you'll find you'll be getting a lot higher level of credible comment. So I'd make that recommendation to you. I'm also concerned your background would indicate to me that you may have some very strong feelings on certain subjects. And I have strong feelings on certain subjects, and I would hope people would not prevent me from sitting on some board because of that. But at the same time, I think it would be fair of those folks to ask me a question or two about that. Let me give you a hypothesis. Let me suggest to you that there are several candidates filed for a judgeship. One of them belongs to the Northern Alaska Environmental Organization and lady, and she has worked actively in crisis counseling for women. The other candidate is a gentleman who has never represented anyone but logging companies and people who make dirt and mud, and also has defended people in criminal activities. That's been his job. Would you find yourself having a tendency to vote one way or the other based upon their previous activities or positions they may have taken?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to pretend I'm totally unbiased, but what I would, what I would hope is to look for the best possible judge, and I don't think someone's background in a particular issue is necessarily to me, that's not the best criteria. I think the things that I laid out in terms of a well-rounded background, that's one of the things I look for. A variety of experience in law, not one particular thing. Often we have someone with all background maybe in public defender, someone with all background in civil law, private civil law, and so what I look for is a kind of a variety of background, a respect from peers, an interview of someone who's real concerned about the law, about applying it fairly. Those are the kinds of issues I look for. And, as the director of the Literacy Council, when people come to apply for a position, well, I don't look for someone with necessarily a background in, you know, working on women's rights or environmental issues, I look for someone who's going to do the job in adult literacy the best possible way they can. If I don't do that, then I might as well, you know, hang up my hat and go home, because I'm not furthering the work that I believe in. And I do believe in the work of the Judicial Council in finding the best qualified judges possible.
Well, I appreciate that, and I think it's a very candid answer, and that's the reason we have lay people seated on these positions, is that you bring your expertise and your field to the board, and personally I appreciate that very much. As I said, I never had a time that the council ever turned me down, but I have been somewhat frustrated at watching over the last several years, where it seemed to me that if you were in the private practice of law, or if you were mixed bag, you'd done some private practice and some prosecutorial work, you couldn't get through the council. But if you were you'd always worked for the public defender agency or some other organization of that type, you got through with no problems. In fact, we've got a chief justice seated on our Supreme Court right now that never did anything other than work as a public defender on the state payroll, and had no other experience in her entire legal career than that. And I know there were several other people when she applied that were turned down, and that she made it up through. It just seemed to me that those people were also well qualified, and maybe 8 or 9 names should have been sent to the governor instead of just 2. But that's my personal thoughts on it.
Right. Well, I'm taking notes, Senator Taylor. I appreciate your comments on that. You have a lot of history and background that I don't have, and you know, when I get feedback like this, I like to take it back to the council and have a candid discussion and see what can be done to make the process the best possible process.
Well, that's my concern, too. I've been American in the American Judicature Association for over 20-some years now, and that's our only purpose for existing, is to try and make this system a better system. So, and my frustration there is that failure on the part of the Judicial Council or too much involvement of political activity within this selection process gives us people who carry out their own ideas as opposed to those which may have been found within the law. And the next thing you know, you end up with letters to the editor and a lot of political furor going on in the legislature about the direct election of judges, which would throw you people out completely. And we would decide judgeships based upon who's got the wealthiest wife, I guess.
Right. And I appreciate that concern. And I think the Judicial Council's real concern that this process is not a political process, that it's really a professional process, and that politics, as much as possible, stays out of the process.
Well, if you'll work towards that goal with me, I'd appreciate it very much, and I want to thank you for putting your name forward and for being willing to serve. Were there other questions? Senator Parnell?
No, Mr. Chairman. In fact, I was just going to move.
Okay.
We
Mary, thanks again very much for standing by this afternoon and for giving us those good, candid answers, and if you could carry a few of my thoughts back to the council, I'd appreciate that also.
Thank you. I'll be happy to do that.
Okay. Senator Parnell.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we forward the appointment of Mary Matthews and the appointment of Carol Alley on to the body for consideration.
Is there objection to the standard letter? There being no objection, the standard letter will issue from the committee. I think it's right there to be signed. You might hand it. Oh, here it is.
Here in the blue folder, sir. There you go.
Okay, back on 331. Well, let's see what questions we've got here. Senator Parnell, did you still have some questions on? Okay. I do have some concerns yet about the what I call the turf battle between you guys and the licensed psychologist psychiatrist. One of the comments I noted, I've got to find it now, was a statement that here it is, if all counselors, including both those of master's and doctoral level, had this education and appropriate postgraduate training, they could be psychologists or psychological associates today.
I'm going to let the counselors take that one.
It's the name of the program. That's the difference. A social worker is trained as a social worker. They have the same training we have, except it's called a social worker. A psychologist is trained as a psychologist at a master's level, at least. Has the same training we have, except they're called a psychologist. My undergraduate work was in psychology. My graduate work was in guidance and counseling. That's the difference.
And all the statutes of all the different licenses that are all out there require that you graduate, for instance, in psychology, in a psychology program. And so people that have tried to jump through the hoops to become psychological associates, that's a master's level psychologist license. Those people that have tried to do that who aren't graduates in psychology have been refused the license because they don't qualify under the current statute.
If I can speak to that directly with two people that we have working on our clinic now. Both of them have degrees in psychology. One of them, both master's level degrees in psychology. One of them is working as a clinician, as I am. The other is working as a clinician, but in the emergency staff. He deals only with people who are emergent, meaning that they're going to kill themselves. Neither one of those people can get licensed under the psychological associate bill because their degree titles are variant from just psychology. They say, like in his case, I believe it's called community psychology. And so they want the board, as it stands now, will not accept that. But his degree is in psychology. His experience is in mental health units all over the country. He's working now doing one of the most stressful, difficult jobs in terms of determining whether or not a person is going to kill themselves, whether they should be freed or whether they should be locked up every day. But he can't get licensed, and at this moment, his job is in jeopardy because he's not licensed. He can't be certified as an expert witness in the court here. His job's dependent upon him being certified as an expert witness, which means license. He just needs to be licensed.
This is a question that's come up before, and if we could get licensed, we would get licensed with other under these other licenses that are out there, but we're not eligible for them. And that's why the 44 other states already have licensed professional counselor in their states, because we don't fit under the other regulations.
I don't think I have any other questions for you.
Senator Wilkin, yes, you've been here all along, and you haven't even said a word, so...
I just wanted to say thank you for hearing the bill today. And maybe I'll go back right to the beginning. When I entered this process in August of last year, I got a call from a constituent. And she had been certainly wronged and maybe harmed by what the person held out to be a counselor. I didn't know anything about counselors or marriage and family therapists or anything else. But I was obligated to make a phone call. And I do know Alan Marotti, who is a respected professor at the university. And I called Alan and I said, told him about the phone call. And so I found out that they were in the process of doing just exactly what we're doing today. So I got involved in this from a consumer protection standpoint, that those people that call themselves counselors should actually be counselors. It's involved even to a greater extent to be something that benefits the counselors themselves, which I'm perfectly happy to support and will. But I'm in it because it's consumer protection. It makes for better services to those people that need them, and gives them more choices for counseling services. So I appreciate hearing it, and I certainly urge your support.
Senator Parnell.
Chairman, I would move SB 331.
Oops.
Oh, do we have anybody on?
I'm sorry. We have we have some folks out there on the teleconference site, too,
to
yeah. Well, let me just ask a question. Anchorage, we have... Sheila Clarkson, PhD.
Yes, I'm here.
Go right ahead.
Thank you very much. I mean, primarily the testimony I plan to submit is on the memo that you have already referred to, and I am here representing the Alaska Psychological Association, and so I'd just like to clarify a couple of pieces of information and also respond to the comments made earlier about testing. ACPA does support the licensing of counselors and for all of most of the reasons already discussed. However, we also believe that the services and qualifications of an independent professional practitioner should reflect the training and the license should reflect the training and the services offered. And the training of counselors differs from the training of psychologists and psych associates, and yet the language of the bill is so broad that they are essentially allowed to do the same thing. The consumer then doesn't necessarily get a clear picture based on the license of what they can expect. We're certainly interested in working with the counselors to clarify language so that we can support a licensing bill. But at this point in time, we have the concerns that are mentioned. And with regard to not being able to be licensed as a psychological associate, for example, with a degree in psychology or a degree in counseling, the licensing requirements are then based on specific coursework in the regulation that allows people to do the kinds of skills that one would expect of a person licensed, and so that the training, the necessary training, is demonstrated in order to be able to do the skills. I'd like to move on to address the issue raised about testing. The comments made earlier by the gentleman are, I guess, an example of exactly the concerns that ACPA has about the inappropriate use of testing. It's not a turf issue, it's a consumer protection issue if you're an individual who is diagnosed by a computerized assessment with a significant mental disorder, for example, a personality disorder, which is a long-standing, serious problem, and it's not appropriate to do that based on the results of a single assessment. The MMPI is not a projective test. It's an objective clinical test, and there are many others. Psychologists and psychological associates have coursework specifically designed and focused on the interpretation beyond computer interpretation of the results of these tests. Those are serious consumer protection concerns with regard to accurate diagnosis, appropriate use of tests, that are issues that prevent us from being able to support the bill at this point in time.
Well, Alaska Psychological Associates, does that include Dr. Lane?
Yes, it does. Dr. Lane is president-elect, and I'm a member of the executive board.
Well, I don't know to what extent, Gary, you've had an opportunity to work with them, but some of this stuff goes back a ways. Was there an amendment that you contemplated at any time concerning, they had sent down some words basically involving the testing techniques to be used?
Mr. Chairman, when we first started this process, the first thing that arose was some concern, and you named it, and I would agree, some turf battle between these two different disciplines. And so in Hess, we sent them off to come up with the best compromise that either of them could agree on, and what we have is in the bill. And there's still some reticence on behalf of the psychologists to to accept, but at the same part, I thought that we had worked it enough to where it made the delineation between and accommodated for both disciplines to the point where the public was served.
Dr. Clarkson, are you aware of the changes that were made in the bill where they talk about, I've been looking here for that.
Yes, I am aware, where they addressed, they limited or restricted the use of projective assessments.
Yes.
However, our concerns extend to other individually administered personality assessments like the MMPI and some of the other tests mentioned, because it requires extensive training. We disagree with the position that a computerized printout is acceptable for diagnosing the kinds of serious diagnoses that come from, that can potentially come from that kind of an assessment. Similarly, the use of individually administered intelligence tests requires specific training, at least a one-semester course, often two semesters. And the issue with regard to consumer protection is that the misdiagnosis or inappropriate use of intelligence tests can have significant impact on an individual's life if it interferes with issues such as vocational rehabilitation services, being determined eligible for services for learning disabilities, simply getting the wrong information about what one's IQ might or might not be. These areas require extensive training in order to do the job right. And what ACPA wants is people who can do the job right. ACPA also recognizes that there's plenty of room for professional counselors to do what they're well trained to do. We're simply asking that the language in the bill reflect the differences so that people who choose to go to either a licensed counselor or a licensed psychologist, social worker, psych associate, whatever, are choosing based on the expectation that they get what comes with that kind of training and preparation.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah,
may I?
Yeah. I'd like to respond.
Yes, I would. I'd like to say that the definition and the scope of practice is what we're basically talking about here, and that we took the language for our scope of practice directly from the marital and family therapist language, and we changed. I can read it actually, but it's we changed who that we are, you know, to calling ourselves the licensed professional counselors are, and we do these things, and we changed also the population with whom we work, and that's basically all we changed. From the statutes that are already out there that the marital and family therapists are working with. And then we added the piece that says that we won't do projective testing. So there's already a criteria or a precedent for this language within that licensed body. And again, we are limiting ourselves with that practice restriction clause that says you can't do what you're not trained to do. So I think we've got this covered, and if we get into just sort of all the different levels of testing, that kind of takes away from the intent. The intent is for us to do what we're trained to do. The intent is for us to help people and not go beyond that. And I think we've established a means for limiting that.
One other thing, if I may, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Clarkson brings up a good point about the fact that the psychologists have written down in detail in their regulations who is educated to do this particular test and that particular test and what the requirements are. But in order to draft the regulations, you have to have a licensed board that can do that. The counselors aren't even at that point yet. They're asking to get a licensed board so they can go about and further try and specify what the criteria should be for people who fall under that board. And I was just taking a look here at the statutes for the licensing of psychologists, and they are maybe a little more specific in terms of they say that someone can get a psychological license if they hold an earned doctorate degree from an academic institution whose program is in graduate study or a doctorate degree in psychology if the program meets the criteria established by the board by regulation in clinical psychology or counseling psychology or education in a field of specialization considered equivalent by the board. To me, that is not necessarily any more specific than the language that we're putting before you today. So, except that it has psychology.
Yeah, well, I assume that's why they're concerned, because there is going to be an ability to draft regulations to further define the scope of practice, and the implication, of course, would be that we're going to define it very narrowly. My experience with most professional groups is they want to define it as broadly as they can, so as to be as encompassing as they can, and I'm sure that's what Dr. Clarkson is concerned about also, is that it not be so broadly drawn as to invade those areas that they spend a lot of time, effort, and money to get degrees in. And I can certainly understand that both from the public protection point of view and also from the concerns that they have for their association and their society that provides those types of services. Well, let me go on. Did you want to respond, Dr. Clarkson, to those comments?
No, I have no further comments.
Okay. Catherine Simone?
Yes, I'm here.
Were you there just to answer questions? I didn't want to bypass you.
Yeah, I was just here to answer questions and observe.
Okay. Did you have a position on the bill?
I'm in favor. I'm a member of the American Counseling Association, and I was a licensed counselor in another state before coming to Alaska, and so I see the benefit of this bill both for consumers and for professionals.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Alan Marotti?
Yes, Senator Taylor.
You wished to testify on this also, didn't you?
I was here primarily to answer questions that the committee may have. I will comment, though, on Dr. Clarkson's statement. The fact that this bill does talk about setting up a professional board for counselors carries with it the implication that that board will have the ability to look at the scope and practice of the individuals who would apply for the license, and that those members would then be held accountable to the ethical codes of the American Counseling Association, which clearly define that a counselor may not practice outside of an area that they are not trained in. And without the board, without the license, you still have the situation that we have today where anyone can go out into the public forum, call themselves a counselor, whether they have a degree, whether they've taken a class, or whether it's just something they think they would like to do, and hold themselves out as the counselor and provide services. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I can guarantee you, as a lawyer, I find all sorts of people giving legal advice, too. But I don't know how much good the degree or title does for a person at times. But okay, Mr. Lloyd Carey, you were just there to observe. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I might add a comment, if it's possible.
Go right ahead.
Yes, I would just bring to the committee's attention that in Soldotna, we currently have a court case here against a local pastor who has been counseling, has in fact testified in court to be a psychologist and to perform psychological evaluations. In a recent deposition by an attorney, it was discovered that this man does not even have a BA degree. And I believe that the public is really hanging out without counselors being licensed. I have a PhD. I have training in taking and giving and analyzing the MMPI. but I cannot get licensed simply because my training is in biblical counseling. It's in pastoral counseling. As a result, there's no provision for license and basically no protection for the public, and that is my main complaint or concern. Thank you.
You would probably not be able to get licensing under this statute either, would you?
Yes, I would. The issue is basically counselors are trained in different programs. My program is fairly close to what a psychologist would take. But as one of the individuals mentioned ago, because it's called a pastoral counseling training program and not a specific psychology program, then it could not be licensed under the psychology statutes and licensing procedures. But this procedure would allow me to be licensed, yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Was there anyone else that I didn't call on in either Fairbanks, Anchorage, or down there in Kenai? Okay, is there anyone else here who wished to testify on the bill? Pleasure of the committee. Member Parnell.
Mr. Chairman, I would move SB 331 from committee with individual recommendations.
There being no objection, bill moves from committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Welcome.
Well, John's got this.
Yeah. Well,
absolutely right.
With that, I just wanted to mention to the committee that is it next Monday, Ralph?
We have, no, Wednesday, sir. We have the resolutions up.
Next Wednesday, we have the two resolutions up, calling for a special prosecutor.
Are those the one on the floor? Didn't you say Monday?
Did I say Monday?
You did on Monday.
You did because Mel came down and was confused by it, and I told her to know that I think they're Wednesday, sir.
Oh,
you might want to correct that in your floor package.
Okay, I'll announce it on Monday.
They're the 22nd, if I'm not mistaken, that's Wednesday.
Well, yeah. Still a good speech.
Yeah. Hey, that's a minor issue.
I thought it would be easier to just do those, and if we want to bring in some witnesses, I'm happy to accommodate any witnesses anybody wants to call. John?